ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 45, text number 2 and 3, chapter entitled Krishna Saves the Son of His Teacher. Uvacha. Oh, get that one up there? Yeah, okay. Text number 2. We're just going to do number 2, Madan Mohan Prabhu. Uvacha. Pitarov. Itam. Sagraja Satvatar Shri Sat. Somebody give me that again? Satvatar Rishabhya. Okay. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. Prashrayavanata Prinan Amba. Tateti Sadharam. It's Murphy's Law. If you've got two verses, the one you decide to chant will be the one you mess up. Uvacha Pitara Vitya Sagraja Satvatarisham. Yeah, that's a tough one. Prashrayavannata Prinan. Ambata teti sadaram. Uvacha pitara vetya. Sagraja Sagraja satvatarshabhya. Prashrayavanata Prinan Ambatateti Sadharam. Somebody with better skills than I may go ahead. Uvacha Pitara Vitya Vacha Pitara Vetya Sagraja Savatar Shabha Prashrayana Vata Prinan Ambata Teti Sadharam. Ladies, anyone? Vacha Pitara Vetya Uvacha, he said, Pitaro, to his parents, Etya, approaching them, Sa, together with, Agraja, his elder brother, Lord Balaram, Satvata, of the Satvata dynasty. Rishabhya, the greatest hero. Prashraya, with humility. Avanata, bowing down. Prinan, gratifying them. Ambatata iti, my dear mother, my dear father. Saadaram, respectfully. Translation. Lord Krishna, the greatest of the Satvatas, approached his parents with his elder brother, humbly bowing his head and gratifying them by respectfully addressing them as my dear mother and my dear father. Krishna spoke as follows. Please repeat. Lord Krishna, the greatest of the Satvatas, approached his parents with his elder brother, humbly bowing his head and gratifying them by respectfully addressing them as my dear mother and my dear father. Krishna spoke the following words. Nasmato yuvayostata nityo tang ti tayor api bala pagonda kaishorya putrabhyam abhavam kvajet. Lord Krishna said, my dear father, because of us, your two sons, you and Mother Devaki always remained in anxiety and could never enjoy our childhood, boyhood, or youth. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses this verse as follows. Quote, one may object that at this point, Lord Krishna had not actually passed the Kishora age, age 10 to 15, since the women of Mathura had stated, kvachati sukumarayango kishorya napta yovano. Krishna and Balaram have very tender limbs, still being in the Kishora age, not having reached their adolescence. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 44, verse 8, previous chapter. The definition of the different stages of growing up is given as follows. Kumaram panchabaddatam pogandam dasamavadi kaishoram a pachadashad yovanam tu tataparam. The Kumara stage lasts until the age of 5, Poganda up till the age of 10, and Kishora to the age of 15. From then on, one is known as yovana. According to this statement, the Kishora period ends at the age of 15. Krishna was only 11 years old when he killed Kamsa. That within itself is quite an interesting thing to think about. According to Uddhava's words, ekadasa samastatra gudharchi sabalovasat. Like a covered flame, the Lord remained there incognito with Balaram for 11 years. Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 2nd chapter, text 26. And since Krishna and Balaram never took brahminical initiation in Brajabhumi, it was at the time of their going to Mathura that their Kishora stage began rather than ended. This objection to Lord Krishna's statement in the present verse that his parents could not enjoy his Kishora age is based on ordinary measurement of time. Yet we should consider the following statement. Kalana Pena Rajarshi Rama Krishna Chagobraje Agarishta Janupadbir Vikarama Tur Anjasa. O King Parikit, within a short time Rama and Krishna began to walk very easily in Gokula on their legs by their own strength without the need to crawl. Sometimes we see that the son of a king, even while in his Pagunda stage of life, undergoes exceptional physical growth and exhibits activities appropriate to the Kishora age. Then what to speak of Lord Krishna, whose exceptional growth is established in the Vaishnava Tushani, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Ananda Vrindavan Champu, and other works. Quote, 3 years and 4 months that Lord Krishna stayed in Mahavan were the equivalent of 5 years for an ordinary child. And thus at that period, he completed his Kumara stage of childhood. The period then from the age of 6 years and 8 months during which he lived in Vrindavan constitutes his Pagunda stage. And the period from the age of 6 years and 8 months through his 10th year, during which time he lived at Nandishwar, Nandagram, constitutes his Kishore stage. Then at the age of 10 years and 7 months, on the 11th lunar day of the dark fortnight of the month of Chaitra, he went to Mathura, and on the 14th day thereafter, he killed Kamsa. Thus, he completed his Kishore period at age 10, and he eternally remains at that age. In other words, we should understand that from this point on, the Lord remains forever a Kishora. Thus, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur analyzes the intricacies of this verse. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayati Agirim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarino Vancha Kalpaturibhyascha Kripa Sinduvahivacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I'm always grateful when I get an opportunity to share the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam with the devotees, especially here today. A couple of things I wanted to mention before, though. I was a little disappointed. My schedule didn't facilitate being able to speak on the last chapter we covered. That chapter, for me personally, is a bittersweet chapter. It's very sweet in the sense that Kamsa gets killed, and everybody's happy for that. So the devotees always relish when one of the big demons goes down, and goes down hard. So Kamsa gets taken down. So it's very sweet. For me personally, it's a bitter chapter. It reminds me of one of my parental failings. When we were living in New York, I had the opportunity very regularly, because of my connection with the gift shop there, to go to India like every 6 months. So my son, who was about 6 years old at the time, every time before I would go to India, I'd say, "So, what would you like me to bring you back from India?" So one particular trip he requested, "Oh, I want a deity of Krishna killing Kavalyapita." I don't know if any of you have ever tried to find such a deity. I searched all over Vrindavan, I searched all over Mathura, I searched everywhere and could not find a deity of Krishna killing Kavalyapita, and came back empty-handed to my six-year-old son. So I always carried that around that I had failed in that sense. However, some years later, I had the good fortune to be in Mahabalipuram in South India and visiting an antique shop, and found an old antique painting of Krishna killing Kavalyapita, and redeemed myself a few years later. So that chapter always has that memory attached to it for me. So our current chapter, it's got a lot of information. It's only 50 verses. It's a rather short chapter by standards of the Bhagavatam. But there are several very, very important points that do get covered throughout this verse that deal with the Lord's activities while he's here on this planet. In these first three verses, three of these subjects are covered very quickly. Here in this material world, our mentality, our activities, our very way of life is all about trying to be the enjoyer. I mean, that is, after all, how we ended up here, thinking, well, hey, what about me? Don't I get to have all the fun? Oh, okay, well, here's where you can go do that. And so since arriving here millions of births ago, we have been running in a dogged pattern trying to pursue the process of false enjoyment of these senses in this body, not with much success. We didn't succeed when we were an Indigopa germ. We didn't succeed when we were a demigod, and we're not succeeding in this life. Simply, we are besieged with birth, death, old age, and disease. And an occasional little bit of pleasure thrown in there just to keep us under the illusion of chasing that next pleasure. So this is our mentality here in this world. So to combat that consciousness, we have to strive to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to see Krishna as that person who's the real enjoyer, that he's the source of everything, that he is the creator of all universes, that he is the controller of all living entities, that he is the source of manifestation for everything that we're encountering. So we have to struggle very hard to place that type of thought process in our consciousness. This is the hard struggle of material life, that we have to do away with that assumed nature of wanting to enjoy and be separate from Krishna, and replace that with the understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no being separate from him. Serving him as the Supreme Lord, understanding his position as the Creator, is the only thing that will give me satisfaction and happiness. So this is what we require. So getting this type of mentality within every action, every thought, every activity we perform is really tough. We've spent 8,400,000 births trying to do that. Well, actually, we haven't spent that many. Just the human form, however many times we've been around this shot, you know, we've been trying to develop that mentality so that we can replace that other consciousness. Now, the interesting thing is that replacing that exploitive, enjoying consciousness with the understanding that Krishna is enjoying is what will enable our path back to home, back to Godhead. It's what will facilitate our returning to that spiritual abode where every step is a dance, every word is a song, and life's a constant festival. Of course, somebody's got to plan that festival, but that's a whole other thing. So this is what we strive for here. But here's the interesting thing. Those personalities who have never been bewildered, such as we are, and left that spiritual abode, who have never given up their love for the Personality of Godhead, who have never tried to leave that service to the Personality of Godhead, that type of thinking, which is crucial and essential for us, spoils everything for them. It's an amazing two-sided coin. Those residents in the spiritual world, when they begin to think, oh, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Balaram is the source of the Chaturvyuha expansions, that all of the universe is emanating. When they start thinking like that, it ruins everything. So this first verse, this is what's going on. Krishna's noticing that Krishna's not noticing, but as the supreme enjoyer, Krishna wants to enjoy a relationship with his devotees where they're not thinking in that manner, where they're serving him as his parents, where they're serving him as his cowherd friends. He wants to lay down on the lap of his buddies when they're out chasing the cows and playing in the forest. And, you know, he wants Mother Jasoda to just be completely absorbed in fixing his lunch and, you know, these types of things. And, you know, maybe Nanda Maharaj and having to, you know, be concerned or chastise him or give him. He wants all this type of relationship in these various ways. This particular chapter deals with that parental mood of affection. And the next chapter, I think it's the next chapter or the chapter after gopis hear the message of the bumblebee. That's a whole nother rasa. This particular one, Krishna wants that. And when those personalities who are fulfilling that role for him, who are satisfying his desire for that relationship, begin to think, oh, wait a minute. That's not my little boy. That's the Supreme Lord. It really mucks it up. So he has to expand his Yogamaya energy and cover them back up again. Yogamaya energy. That's what he expands to cover the residence for that eternal sweet rasa. That Mahamaya energy is what we end up in covered here in the material world, that illusion that we're the enjoyer. So this is what the first verse is dealt with, is this observance by Krishna that, wait a minute, no, this isn't the mood I want. I don't want Vasudeva and Devaki looking, oh, Supreme Lord. That's not what I'm looking for. That's not the relationship. So, like some great magical act, some mystical potency, he expands his yoga maya, covers them back up, and puts them back into that mode of parental affection. Vasudeva and Devaki, when they see Krishna has killed Kamsa, he's reinstating Ugrasena, he's conquered these two wrestlers, it completely takes away that easy mood they have to embrace him. Krishna wants to be embraced by his mother and father in that parental mood of affection. But when they see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's no family hug. It's just not possible. So, put the illusory energy back over there. The reason that Krishna killed Kamsa was for the release of his parents. So once that's accomplished, he wants to now enjoy that mood again. Them not being in that mood makes it difficult for him. So he begins to expand this yoga maya, bring them back in that, and then appeals to them in such a way to enhance that mood that he has now brought them back into. So that's verse 2 and 3 that we have today here. In verse 2, I noticed a couple of interesting things, which, as I say, the Sanskrit words were a little challenging there. But there were two particular points I saw that were kind of under the surface of this first verse. The two words here, Rishabha, which is why I had such a difficult time pronouncing it, because when the two words merge, you pronounce it differently than when they're separate. But the second half of that second line, second word, Rishabha and Prashraya. This means a great hero. Rishabha, great hero. And the second word, Prashraya, means humility, with humility. Now, generally, we do not see these two words, someone who's a great hero, someone who's a great victor, someone who was conquered. We generally don't see that second word, humility, attached to that. Just like sometimes when an individual in a sporting event will achieve the goal, you know, make a basket or a kick a goal and whatever it is, you see that. You know, they become very proud and very big display of their conquering like that. It's not a mood of humility. This isn't what you see. So to see these two words put together in this verse, it's a little uncommon. Humility is rarely put in connection with victory like that. Usually those persons are enjoying the prowess of displaying their heroism, of displaying their victor. But they don't usually bring that humility along for the ride, so to speak. Yet the reality of humility, in connection with being a hero, makes the quality of being a hero even greater. This is the interesting thing, that if a great hero has a quality of humility, it makes his position more respectable, more honorable. So this is, I noticed this in that combination of those two words. Then the opening statement in the translation of this verse describes Lord Krishna, the greatest of the sattvatas. So I got to thinking about this word, sattvatas. Now, you know, if it said Yadavas are the greatest of the this or that, you know, these are generally things, you know, but sattvatas wasn't something so familiar with me, so I looked it up. According to Monier Williams, who is very well known for his Sanskrit dictionary, and by the way, just as a separate point, his life story is quite an interesting read if you get an opportunity. But according to Monier Williams, Sattvat has three root meanings. First one is to be the son of. To be the son of, that's very applicable here. Krishna is, it says, the greatest of the sattvas, the greatest of the sons of, fill in the blank. Krishna has been the son of so many different personalities, particularly in this one, we're referring to Vasudeva and Devaki. So very applicable in that sense. The second root meaning of that word, to be an ardent worshiper of the Lord. This is very appropriate also. This fits into this scenario here, both from the side of Vasudeva and Devaki before he expands his Yogamaya, realizing his position, and from the side of Krishna, establishing himself as a member of his own family in their own practices of worshiping the Lord. But the primary definition that I liked here is the first one that is given in this connection. To belong to a particular mixed caste of both Vaishya and Kshatriya background. I mean, if we look at Krishna's life, he's born, he and Balaram both, they're born of a Kshatriya father. But they're raised by Vaishya parents. So they have a mixed caste. Sometimes we see when the different demons would come forward. Pumdraka was real good at this. They would describe Krishna's qualities in less than favorable ways, and they would take certain words and say, you know, this, that, and the other, and diminish Krishna. Whereas when the acharyas would look at these words, they say, oh, yes. But what this means in reality is such and such. Vishwanath Chakraborty was very good at this. So in this description, this word sattvata is very applicable to Krishna and Balaram because they're born of a Kshatriya family but raised by a Vaishya family. So they have a mixed caste. And later on in different pastimes, you'll see this will be brought up many times by different opponents. We don't even know their background, this so-called cowherd boy or this... And then here again, as I mentioned, the acharyas will step in, defending the boy's birth as it is and raising these points that although it may appear that they are a mixed caste, this is actually to their benefit, to their glory, to their praise and valor. And this is how the acharyas go through and define these things. Now, in that same research, if we look at the Veda base for this word sattvata, Srila Prabhupada gives a very interesting definition of the word. Those liberated souls who have a relationship with the Supreme, particularly in reference to the Yadava clan, Yadava dynasty. So certainly the greatest of the Yadavas, those who are liberated and have a relationship with the Lord, would be Krishna himself. So even in his role as a so-called ordinary person manifesting his pastimes here in this world, still all of his activities are described in the most wonderful ways, and all of his connections with different personalities are able to be understood in a very glorious manner as well. So these are the different points that this first word in the verse there that stood out for me. Then in the rest of that verse, Krishna begins to speak humbly, as we mentioned, to his mother and father, and begins to address them in a very gratifying tone. And that brings us to text number 3. Now, in this third verse here, there's two additional words that very, very much grab, if you will, the mood of this particular chapter and particular section of this chapter. Nitya utkantitayo. Always, nitya, in anxiety. He's addressing his parents that they're always in anxiety. Now, why would a parent always be in anxiety? Why would Vasudeva and Devaki always be in anxiety? I mean, aren't they the parents of Krishna and Balaram? What's there to be in anxiety about? You know? Na Bala, na Pagonda, na Kashori. They didn't get to experience the youth, baby pastimes. They didn't get to experience the childhood pastimes, and they didn't get to experience his youthful pastimes. So as a parent, they couldn't enjoy any of these. And what's more enjoyable to a parent than this toddler age and this little boyhood or girlhood age and the early youth of their children, particularly in this case, Vasudeva and Devaki, of their sons? You know, for a parent not to enjoy that, it's like death. I mean, even Hadai Pandit and Mother Padmavati, the parents of Nityananda, they were at least able to enjoy up to the Kishori age before Nityananda left. So they at least got that. Dasarath, when Lakshman and Ram left, they at least stayed until that Kishori age also. But here, Vasudeva and Devaki, no toddler age, no boyhood age, no youthful age. They didn't get any of that. This type of distress, anxiety as the word is, this is very, very painful thing for a parent. It's very unsettling. Actually, it's the only time in a child's life, it's the only time in a child's life to really enjoy immensely the relationship with the children, because after that becomes the yovana age, which is the teenage years. And that's not so much fun. Not to give any foreshadowing to your futures. But, you know, usually the fun's over by the time, because once they become teenagers and they become their own person and they become adults and on like that. And so those little exchanges that we all remember, oh, I remember when, you know, and so on, you know, and when they were swimming this way and climbing that tree. And these are the leelas that we hear about from the Lord's pastimes in whatever incarnation and relish very much. So the understanding of this is that this was the cause of anxiety for Vasudeva and Devaki, that they did not get to enjoy this type of pastime with their children. Nanda and Mother Jasoda, they did enjoy this. Here again, this goes back to their so-called mixed caste in their Vaishya times in Vrindavan, in Nandagram, in Mahavan. This is where they enjoyed these activities. And it was a great source of satisfaction for Jasoda and Nanda. They were very, very satisfied. When Nanda Maharaj would see little Krishna struggling to bring his little wooden shoes in on his head, oh, it would bring him such satisfaction. When Jasoda would see that Krishna is very happy to sit and eat whatever she had prepared, she would bring such satisfaction. In the meantime, Vasudeva and Devaki, they're locked up in jail somewhere. Where are our boys? What's happening with our kids? I wonder what they're doing now. You know, it's a great source of anxiety like that. So this was the source of their difficulty. And Krishna addresses that by acknowledging that the reason your anxiety is due to us, your two sons. You could never enjoy these activities and remained in anxiety due to our own activities. So then in the purport here, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti gives an almost unclear explanation of the mathematics of Krishna's age. Almost as unclear as the mathematics of Mrs. Dwyer's 8th grade algebra class to me. If you read through this purport, you have to really read it 2 or 3 times to really get a clear understanding of what's being said. But there is one sentence in here that really sums it up. It's described just in the previous sentence here. It's described how sometimes the king, son of a king, exceptionally grows and has achievements and accomplishments. This sentence here. Then what to speak of Lord Krishna, whose exceptional growth is established and names many different Vaishnava literatures. So we can understand that the standard that we have for what is the Paganda age, what is the Kishori age, what is the different age groups like that, that this may be a particular standard that is not necessarily applied directly to Krishna in this way. Mentioned by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, how he breaks it down into 3 years and 4 months while the Lord stayed in Mahavan, were the equivalent of 5 years for an ordinary child. So we're knocking 2 years off right there. and thus he completed his Kumara stage. The period then, for 6 years and 8 months, during which he lived in Vrindavan, constitutes his Bagunda age. So 3 years and 4 months, 6 years and 8 months. So now we've got 6, 7, 8, 9, we've got 10 years, right? And he's only at the Bagunda stage. Now, ordinarily, 10 years would put you in the Kishori age. 10 years at the Bagunda stage. And so, therefore, when he's in Nandishwar, Nandagram, this period constitutes his Kishori age. And then at the age of 10 years and 7 months, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur breaks this down amazingly, on the lunar day, 11th lunar day, on the dark fortnight of the month of Chaitra, he went to Mathura, and on the 14th day, he killed Kamsa. This is how the ladies witnessing the match were able to understand his age by this type of calculation here. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has very, as it says here, analytically presented the intricacies of this verse to us and how the different ages impact like that. Now, one thing I noticed in this was that it mentions and since Krishna and Balaram never took Brahminical initiation in Brajabhumi, it was at the time of their going to Mathura that the Kishori age began rather than ended. The Upanaya Samskara, which is given, this is done between the age of 8 and no later than the age of 15. So since they hadn't received it yet, we can understand that they weren't into their Yovana age yet. They were still in that earlier age group, because at this time, they were then sent, a Vasudeva arranged there in Mathura for them to receive their Brahminical initiation. So they would have been between that 10-year period, about 10 years old, because that's when he arranged for this, and this is never done very much later than that. So there was one other point in here that I had wanted to cover, and that is the debt that the son has to the parents. But I looked at the successive verses, and I looked at the clock and realized that it was getting a little late. It was supposed to end. And so the next 3-4 verses, they cover the mood of obligation that a son has to his parents. And we'll let the successive Vaishnavas speak on that point. So these were the 2 verses I received today. And with my limited knowledge, I tried to give a little explanation. If anybody has any comments or questions or anything they want to add, please feel free. Okay, well, then, yes? Oh, the microphone's out, sorry. Okay, yes, go ahead. Vasudeva. Well, as we see from just the explanation of this one verse, there are many layers to these verses that are given. There are many different layers in the pastimes. Oh, the question was, can we understand Vasudeva and Devaki's feeling of separation in more than just the way that is presented here as feeling separated from Krishna and Balaram? And we can see that these moods of separation carry many different levels to them. So, I mean, I would have to conclude, yes, that I'm sure there's some place where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or Sridhar Swami examines that particular point in more detail than we've had presented here. Anyone else? No? Oh, Madan Mohan?
One quick point. Last week, there was when right after Krishna killed Kamsa, and he dragged,
and everybody cheered and roared, and the audience stood up.
Yeah, and it mentioned how all his family, the cowboys all went and they embraced him and they danced around, right. And they compared that to a like a box. When he wins, everybody comes in and they all danced around.
Well, as long as we're bringing sporting analogies, Arb, when somebody scores the winning goal in the World Cup, all the teammates come out and jump and like that. Yeah, so.
So that part also there. And then now he's humble, but at that particular moment, he had all that.
Well, yeah, but there's a difference there in that his fellow friends, teammates, as we would for the analogy, have brought that out, you know, by the big huddle and hugging and, yeah, you know, everybody jumping on him, you know, like that, because he's accomplished this great thing. A little different than strutting around like a peacock, you know, like that. So the friends have brought that out in appreciation of what he's done, and that's a reciprocal relationship with the friends. Yeah. Thanks for giving me a chance to work in the World Cup analogy. I was avoiding that. All right, anyone else? No, we'll finish there. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.